Welcome to the Hyphen Church Podcast, where faith meets the spaces in between. We're here to explore what it means to belong, to grow, and to encounter God in the midst of life's questions and complexities. Whether you're here to listen, reflect, or take a step forward, know that you're in the right place. Let's make space together for what God is doing in us and through us. Now, let's dive into today's message.
And this morning, we're going to look at one of maybe the toughest parables that Jesus preaches and teaches on in the New Testament. We can find this in Luke 16, and it comes to us at a time in Luke's greater gospel where he talks a lot about wealth and the understanding of how we are to use our wealth, and not just our money, but how do we use our time and our resources and our talents well for the kingdom. And so Luke 16, 1 through 15, this is the parable of sometimes the shrewd manager or the unjust manager, or your Bible might say other things like that, but this is the unjust manager. Jesus also said to his disciples, "There was a rich man who was informed of accusations that his manager was wasting assets. So he called the manager in and said to him, 'What is this I hear about you? Turn in the account of your administration, because you can no longer be my manager.' Then the manager said to himself, 'What should I do, since my master is taking my position away from me? I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm too ashamed to beg. I know what to do so that when I am put out of management, people will welcome me into their homes.' So he contacted his master's debtors one by one. He asked the first, 'How much do you owe my master?' And the man replied, 100 measures of olive oil. The manager said to him, 'Take your bill, sit down quickly, and write 50. Then he said to another, 'And how much do you owe?' The second man replied, 100 measures of wheat. The manager said to him, 'Take your bill, write 80. The master commended the dishonest manager because he acted shrewdly. For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their contemporaries than the people of light. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by how you use worldly wealth, so that when it runs out, you will be welcomed into the eternal homes. The one who is faithful in very little is also faithful in much, and the one who is dishonest in very little is also dishonest in much. If then you haven't been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will entrust you with the true riches? And if you haven't been trustworthy with someone else's property, who will give you your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money." The Pharisees, who loved money, heard all this and ridiculed him. But Jesus said to them, "You are the ones who justify yourselves in men's eyes, but God knows your hearts, for what is highly prized among men is utterly detestable in God's sight." So this week, normally when a preacher starts, they will start their sermon with some sort of opening story that sort of connects the story to the real world, giving them a great place to jump in. And this parable doesn't need that, because there are so many points of tension in here, so many things that need to be uncovered about what Jesus is talking about here. It seems like he is giving the shrewd, dishonest manager praise. It sounds like he's saying that this guy did right, and you go now and do likewise. It's sounding as if he is showing us that the way that we should get out of our problems is taking a worldly solution to those things. And it almost seems like Jesus here is pushing the use of worldly gains, worldly money, in a way that would be dishonest for their use. There's a lot of tension in this parable, and there's a lot of underlying questions that we need to sort of suss out a little bit. The question I think that's overriding in this whole thing is, how is it that people can act with such boldness and brilliance when it comes to their career and their finances and their reputation and their family and their security and their safety, and yet remain passive when eternal things are at stake. I think that's the crux of the matter. I think that's what Jesus is telling this story for. Because he is showing us in a world that is devoted to understanding how to get ahead and using our wealth and our resources and our time and our talents to get out of a situation or to better ourselves. And look at how much this man, this servant, worked to restore his own life and his own reputation in the community. And how much more should we, when dealing with matters of eternal security, work with urgency? So let's talk about this. Let's talk about what we're going through here with this manager and this servant. So the manager is about to fire the servant because he feels he's stealing from him. He knows he's stealing from him. He has the evidence, which is kind of an interesting thing. Already we're thinking, why doesn't he just make it happen right there? Why give him the opportunity to go and make amends with the other people around him? Why not, as a manager, just say, we have the proof, that's it, you're fired? But he finds out that the manager is going to fire him, so he does something. And it's really interesting because he's not doing it to save himself. He's doing it to make his manager feel better and look better. And he's trying to win approval of the people around him. So knowing that he'll lose his livelihood, he comes up with a plan. And he has to do a plan because he says, I'm too weak to dig and I'm too proud to beg. Which, I mean, that's my life story right there. I mean, that should be on a shirt, on a coffee mug, or something like that. I can't do an honest day's work, but I'm just certainly too proud to beg for money and for favors like that. So he has to figure out a way to make things better. How can he make some friends around him? So he comes up with this plan that says, I'm going to go to all of my master's accounts and the ones that have debts, and I'm going to make friends with them and reduce their debts so that they will feel like they owe me a favor. And so the master finds out about this plan after it's all happened, and he actually, surprisingly, and this is where the parable falls apart for us. This is where it gets really tense, because the master commends him for his shrewdness, for his cleverness, for coming up with an ideal plan to save himself rather than condemning him for his dishonesty. He's actually stealing from the manager. He's stealing from the manager because he's reducing those debts without the manager saying, oh yeah, that's fine, go and do that. He's come up with this clever plan, and the manager is actually, you know what? I'm pretty impressed by that. Yeah, I'm not even mad, because that's actually a really good idea that you just saved yourself in that way. So Jesus, we have to realize though, is not praising his ethics here. He's highlighting decisive action in light of an urgent future. Okay, all right, now something's clicking. The wheel, the gears are falling into place. The key is in the slot. We can see that this servant is trying to help himself in the future. He's trying to build up something for himself so that when the future hits, when it comes through, he is going to be able to have a nicer time of it. Because if he were just fired, if time were to end and that would be the end of it right there, he wouldn't have anything to save him further down the line. And so for me, and you could have other opinions, and there's about 13 or 14 different scholars out there who have different opinions as to what this is going on here. But for me, what this parable about is as a call to spiritual urgency and understanding that the way that we spend our time, the way that we spend our currency, should not be of consuming worldly things, but consuming faithful eternal things. That the idea of that the world is so good at this, that this servant is a reflection, a mirror of the world, and he is so good at doing this. Why are you not good at doing this? Why are you not so clever when it comes to your future? Why are you not trying to figure out a way to celebrate the urgency of what comes next? Verse 8 says, "For the children of this world," meaning the unbelievers, meaning the worldly people, "they are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the children of light." And we could say it a different way. If only the children of light acted as decisively about eternal things as this worldly man did about temporary things. If only we could be like this guy. Now, again, we're not praising the dishonesty here. We're not praising that. We're talking about the attention to the future. We're thinking about the urgency of a life to come. Are we paying attention to that? Are we giving that the expectation and the urgency it needs? I think that this parable reminds us to treat eternal things with the same care and attention as if we would, as if they were earthly things. We go to lengths to make sure our families are happy, that we're working well in our jobs, that everything around us is safe. We put all of that stuff together. We have enough money for the next day. We have enough food for the next day. We have enough clothing for the next day. And all of these things work together, and we urgently seek them out. And if we don't have enough food, or if we don't have enough of clothing, if we don't have enough heat, or we don't have enough air conditioning, we go and seek them out. Those are urgent things for us. And Jesus's point, why don't you feel that same way about the things of the eternalness? Why don't we have that same draw, that same urgency? I don't have enough prayer in my life. I'm not giving as much compassion in my life as I should. And we don't feel the same draw. We don't feel the same urgency as, oh my gosh, I don't have enough food for tomorrow. So I go to the store. I have it delivered. Whatever it might be, I can seek that out, and I do that in an urgent manner, because if I don't have that, then my family doesn't eat. That's urgent. And we're not saying that's wrong. But what Jesus' point is, why don't you have that same urgency in your faith? Why are you spending so much time on these worldly, temporary things when you could be spending your time worried and urgency about those heavenly things? This is a wake-up call to believers. Jesus is saying, look at how cleverly worldly people act to secure short-term benefits. And how much more should my people act wisely for what is eternal? See, this is a discipleship parable. You thought it was about money, but it's about how do we steward our faith well? How do we act well in light of what's coming up next? This isn't a parable for unbelievers. This is a parable for the disciples who are standing. This is a parable for the Pharisees who we see in verse 14. This is not a parable for people who don't believe, because they're spending their time and effort and energy in worldly things. And Jesus is saying, look at that. Of course they're happy. They have a need, they have urgency, and they go out and they spend and they fulfill that. Now, why aren't you doing that in the same way with eternal things? Why aren't you preparing yourself in your future in the same way? It's a kingdom strategy lesson. Be just as intentional and thoughtful and creative about kingdom priorities as the world is for earthly ones. So if the world hustles to protect temporary treasure, how can the church be lazy about eternal ones? And so the unjust steward acted decisively when he saw that the end was coming. And so Jesus is desperately urging believers to do the same thing, not self-preservation, which is what the man, which is what the unjust steward was doing, but for kingdom investment, investing in the kingdom, the currency of faith, spending that faith to invest in the kingdom. I think this entire parable is a discipleship training moment, helping us to understand its formational purpose, not just confrontational. The parable is addressed to believers to instruct them on the necessity of not forgetting the priority of values related to a future life. And so the question for us this morning becomes, how do we then steward what we have been given in a way that reflects faith in eternity? Oh boy, that's a tough question. That's a tough question. Because I know how I steward my finances. I know how I steward my time. How do I steward my faith? How do I steward the things that God has given me in a way that reflects faith in eternity? In other words, how do we spend what we trust? And do we spend the things on what we trust? I think there's three ways that we can build up a currency of faith. Number one is to use temporary wealth for eternal good. Jesus says in verse 9, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself. This really sounds strange to our ears because it sounds like Jesus is saying, buy yourself some good friends. Use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself. But in here, Jesus is talking about inviting us to leverage what we have, not to hoard it. How much more winsome do we seem as a church when we're using, and worldly wealth is not a negative term here. It's just the term, it's the Greek word mammon. You've heard that before. It means wealth, it means possessions, it means money. And so it's just in contrast to heavenly things, to heavenly wealth. And so he's using the word worldly wealth. Use that, use your mammon to gain yourself friends. How can we use our money and our possessions and our resources and our time to reach out beyond our walls? And so Jesus is saying, don't hoard it. You're not going to make any friends by hoarding the stuff that you've been given. You're going to make friends. You're going to seem winsome. You're going to seem warm and open and inviting to other people if you give graciously to them, if you go to their houses and cancel debts. Faith means that we see our time, money, energy, and relationships as eternal investments. What a novel concept. What an unbelievable idea that we see our relationships on earth as eternal investments. How does that change your marriage? How does that change your friendship with that person that just really annoys you day in and day out? How does that change your relationship with your coworkers? How does that change how you invest in your children? How does that change how you invest in your neighbors? Faith means we see all of these things around us as eternal investments. And so we can't take it with us. But you can send it ahead in the form of generosity, compassion, gospel partnership. Number two, I think we need to be faithful in the small things. There is faithfulness in small things. Jesus said, whoever is faithful in the very little will also be faithful with much, and whoever does not have faith in the little things will not be faithful in the large things. And so the same thing, how can I trust you with something small if I can't trust you with something large? And so we look at things in our lives, well, how did they get those things? How did those things become better? How do they have so much of this? Why is that church so much bigger? Well, I think that God is saying, I want to trust you with something small. I want to trust you with what you've been given first before anything is added to that. And I don't think it's just in heavenly things. I don't think it's just in a church thing. I think it's also with worldly things. How we manage earthly things reveals how we will handle heavenly things. How we act when no one's watching will tell us how we act when someone is watching. In our heavenly things, in our earthly things, we're going to treat them the same way. And Jesus is saying, I can't give you heavenly things if you're not treating the earthly things with respect. Money is always a test. It's not treasure. How we spend it, how we use it, how we live with it, our relationship to it, our relationship with others is a test of our faith. It's not something to treasure. It's not something to hold. Discipleship is formed in ordinary transactions. What you do with what's in your hand today. You say you trust God with your soul, then start trusting Him with your budget. And that's not just a budget of money, that's a budget of time, that's a budget of your energy, how you spend your days. There's a budget in everything that we do. And so I say, yeah, God, I trust you with my soul, but I'm going to tinker over here with these things. I'm going to plan my days and I'm going to plan where my money goes. And Jesus says, we need all in on this. The third thing, we need to serve the right master. You cannot serve both God and money. You can't serve both God and mammon. You can't serve both your heavenly Father and your possessions here. There was a popular saying in the first century that says, you can't ride two horses and you can't pull back two bows. We're going to be drawn from one to the other, and it's very easy to do so. It's very easy to start to ride two horses, and we'll find that our attention is being pulled in one way or the other. And Jesus is asking, he's asking the question, which one do you want to serve? Do you want to give your attention to earthly things, or do you want to give your attention to godly things? Money wants your loyalty, by the way. Amazon wants your loyalty. Your possessions in your house want your loyalty, but so does God. Whose loyalty is more important to you? You will always spend your life on what you believe will give you life. Oof. You will always spend your life on what you believe will give you life. You will always spend your faith on something that you think will give you faithfulness. You will always trust something that you think has your trust. And so as we look at our life, as we look at our possessions, as we look at our families, where does it lie? Who do we serve? In verses 14 and 15, we finally see the Pharisees pop up. And they've listened to this parable and they hate it. They cannot stand this one. They just look, and normally I would say the Pharisees looked at Jesus and they mumbled or they grumbled, but this one, they sneered at him. They were actually derogatory toward him. And they sneered because they loved money. Jesus says, you are the people that love money. But this is where we get into the idea of appearance versus authenticity. That Jesus says, God knows your heart. What is highly valued among men is detestable in God's sight. And so you can have the appearance of religion. You can have the appearance of, of Christianese. You can have the appearance of being a faithful follower of Christ, but God knows your heart. In which direction is your heart pulling you? Because we can come in here and we can put on this song and dance and we can worship Christ and God and the Holy Spirit and dwell within that and have prayer and leave here and start thinking about something else with urgency. This is where the parable becomes personal to us. Because it's not just about money, it's about what we love and about what we trust and who we're really serving. How can we develop an authentic relationship, an authentic faith with God, rather than one that's just built on appearances? It says, "You, I know you. You love the things of this world. I know you." We want to strive for authenticity over appearance. The Pharisees justified themselves before others. But God is not fooled by spiritual performance. And so we have to ask ourselves, listen, what are we doing? Are we just performing? Is our faith just something, a performance to show other people? Look how faithful I am. Look at how strong my prayers are. Look at how good my Bible study is. The unjust steward was at least honest about his situation and acted decisively. But the Pharisees, they're all image. There's no faith in that. God doesn't want the performance of righteousness. He wants the practice of faith. So are you using your life to look faithful or to actually be faithful? That's the currency of faith. Are we spending our lives trying to look faithful, or are we spending our life actually being faithful? We need to spend our life on what lasts. We need to spend our faith on the heavenly things. There are two currencies, two economies, two masters in this world. And the manager saw his end coming and acted, and we know eternity is coming. And will we act with that same resolve, with that same urgency? The currency of faith is not belief alone. It's belief acted out in bold stewardship and wise investments and eternal focus. So here's our final challenges for the day. What are you doing with your influence? What are you doing with your budget? What are you doing with your power and your time and your energy and your money and your family and your relationships? Are you trading temporary gains for your faith? Are you sacrificing your faith? Are you paying your faith out and saying, I'm going to give it to this thing, which is temporary? Or are you investing your treasure in something that never fades? Because we can't serve both things. We can't serve the temporary and the lasting. And we'll always be disappointed with our time spent on the things that fade.